I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Happy Saturday! In our episode on Henry Martin Robert, we talked about his building a redoubt, that's a sort of temporary, usually fortification, for the U.S. Army during the Pig War. So today's classic is our episode on the Pig War, which came out all the way back almost 10 years ago on April 9th, 2014.
We have a couple of corrections for this one. San Juan Island is not the largest island in the San Juan Islands. It is the second largest. Also, nobody went through the Panama Canal in this episode since that was not built yet. They crossed Panama overland.
Those are the only mistakes I remember from 10 years ago. One can hope there were not others. Enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy B. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
And so you, it's funny to me, I wrote this little outline with an introduction that begins, if you grew up in the Pacific Northwest or maybe in Vancouver, or especially in the islands between them, you may have already heard about the story we're going to talk about today, which is the Pig War.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you have tuned in thinking this is about the Bay of Pigs invasion, I'm sorry, we're talking about something else. However, you did grow up in that area, and it was a new story to you.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do all of my growing up there. I moved from there when I was a little over 9, but I still have siblings there and have gone back there several times, and I had never heard of it.
Yeah.
And right in that area.
Right,
I mean,
there.
Like Tacoma and Puyallup, which is right outside Seattle. So I should have heard of it, but I never had.
Well,
I may have been too young when I left. I missed that chunk.
Well, this was recommended as a subject by listener Katie, and it is basically a story of how in 1859, the United States and Britain very nearly went to war over an issue that seems more likely to start a feud between Hatfields and McCoys, which is that an American settler shot a Canadian pig that was rooting around in his garden. Doesn't that sound silly?
Yes, and I can also see how that would escalate.
In a Hatfield and McCoy
oh,
style.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, so that is what we are going to talk about today. Of course, people had been living on what is now known as San Juan Island, between the mainland of Washington and the island of Vancouver, for thousands of years before European explorers started pushing into the Pacific Northwest. So during this sort of European exploration phase, Spain was the first country to claim and rename this island when Francisco Eliza dubbed it Isla y Archipelago de San Juan.
Its location and fertile soil made it a really attractive spot for the Spanish, as well as the British and the Americans, although Spain eventually withdrew from the area.
In 1818, the United States and Britain signed the Anglo-American Convention, which reinforced England's control over the eastern half of Canada while allowing both nations to operate what was then called Oregon Country jointly.
Citizens of both nations would be allowed to live in this area, and the agreement would be renewed every decade unless one nation or the other could conclude that it had settled the region.
Yeah, so it was basically, if some person or country eventually had the most guys in there, it reminds me of like a board game where like, I have 30 miniatures in here, so it's mine now. For the first several decades, both sides were kind of thinking that it was unlikely that this thing was going to be renewed. American settlers and prospectors thought they clearly had the advantage, and at the same time, so did English merchants and trappers.
Just probably an indication that it was pretty evenly divided.
For a while, yes.
But eventually, the tide did start to shift, and the American population in Oregon Country skyrocketed between 1840 and 1845. And around this same time, fur trading started to dwindle as the region suffered from over-trapping, and this made it less attractive to England. And England was less motivated to maintain its boundaries, whereas the U.S. was still quite eager for the land. So in 1846, the U.S. and Great Britain signed the Treaty of Oregon.
This is the treaty that set the border between the United States and Canada at the 49th parallel. So that really long, straight portion, it looks straight on a map. If you're actually trying to walk down it, it is not remotely straight because it was delineated by people on the ground with kind of primitive instruments. But this long stretch of border that is north of what's now North Dakota, Montana, and Washington, and south of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba.
And it seems pretty self-explanatory until you get to the western end of the border. The treaty went on to say it, quote, shall be continued westward along the 49th parallel of north latitude to the middle of the channel which separates the continent from Vancouver's Island and thence southerly through the middle of the said channel and of Fuca's Straits to the Pacific Ocean.
The problem was that this channel was really two large straits and a lot of other smaller waterways. The Harrow Strait lay next to Vancouver Island, and the Rosario Strait lay next to the mainland in what is now Washington. And in between were the San Juan Islands, which became disputed territory, with both the United States and Canada basically saying, that is mine. The largest island, the one known as San Juan Island, was the one that was in most demand.
The U.S. made an official claim to the islands in 1853 by including it with the creation of Washington Territory. The Hudson's Bay Company, which had been operating on the island since at least 1845, responded by building a sheep farm on the southern shore that September, which quickly started to flourish. A man named Charles Griffin was sent to run it, and he named it Bellevue. For a while, it was just Griffin and his staff and their sheep that were all living on this 55-square-mile island.
This doesn't sound like a huge population, but it was a pretty large sheep farm. There were, like, almost 5,000 sheep.
But the sheep did not count as humans.
No. they did not.
There was no equivalency.
So the land on San Juan Island was very rich and productive, and it became a prime location for American settlers, especially after gold rushes in the area kind of drew people out there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they would fail and people would look for something else to do,
yeah,
like starting a farm. So soon, Americans coming into the region were staking claims in what had been the Hudson's Bay Company's grazing land. So the British government viewed all these American incomers as squatters, and tensions between the British and the Americans actually living there ran pretty high.
So case in point, in 1854, a U.S. customs collector showed up on the island and tried to collect duties from Griffin's farm manager, and the farm manager swore out a warrant for the custom collector's arrest for trespassing on British soil.
Then, in March of 1855, a sheriff from the Washington mainland brought his posse over the channel in the middle of the night and confiscated 35 of Griffin's sheep, claiming that they were going to be sold to pay back taxes. Hudson's Bay Company later demanded $15,000 in damages. This also led Vancouver's governor, James Douglas, to write to Isaac L. Stevens, who was his counterpart in Washington, to complain about it. The name Isaac L. Stevens may ring a bell if you remember our Chief Seattle episode. He plays a role in that also.
And this whole thing was raising enough eyebrows in Washington, D.C., that Secretary of State William L. Macy also wrote to Governor Stevens, basically saying, hey, please play nice, guys. He also asked for the British government to do the same with Governor Douglas, and they did.
Sadly, this did not really help diffuse anything. And before we go into detail on why, let's take a moment and talk about a word from our sponsor.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's get back to where things got simultaneously escalated and a little silly. American Lyman Cutler was part of the American influx of settlers onto San Juan Island. He was a failed gold prospector who built a little cabin and planted a potato patch right by the Hudson's Bay Company's sheep run. He later claimed that Governor Stevens himself had told him that the land belonged to America, and so Cutler was claiming 160 acres under the Donation Land Claim Act of 1850. So, like the Homestead Act later did in the Midwest, the Donation Land Claim Act allowed citizens over the age of 21 to claim a bunch of land for free if they met certain residency and improvement conditions.
Number one, disputed land was not up for grabs under this act. And number two, the Land Claim Act expired in 1855 before Cutler even got there. And then number three, possibly a lesser, but definitely a critical point,
his improvements were really not so great. His potato patch was only fenced on three sides, and that allowed animals to trot right in and plunder his crop.
One of these invading animals was a boar, belonging to Charles Griffin of Bellevue Sheep Farm fame. Cutler claimed that he woke up one morning to the sound of laughter outside of his window. This was on June 15, 1859. He looked outside to see one of Griffin's men laughing at a pig rooting through his potato patch. So Cutler went outside and shot it.
This would not have been newsworthy if Cutler had not been American and if the pig had not effectively been the property of the Hudson's Bay Company, which was a trading company that ran much of the show in Canada.
At first, the two men did try to work it out between themselves. Cutler offered to replace the pig or to get estimates from three men about how much the pig was worth and then use that information to figure out how much money to repay Griffin for it. Griffin, on the other hand, demanded $100, saying that the pig was a prized breeder. And Cutler said, quote, "Better chance for lightning to strike you than for you to get $100 for that hog." And then he stormed away in a huff.
Yeah. Always fun when things escalate and become insulting.
It's going to be so much more escalation.
Griffin took this matter to his bosses at the Hudson's Bay Company, who went to Cutler's cabin to try to get restitution. And of course, Cutler refused to pay. It is possible that the Hudson's Bay Company men also tried to have Cutler arrested, but if they did, it never came to fruition because he refused to go with the people who came to arrest him.
Yeah, the records are a little unclear on that. Some sources say one thing and some sources...
It may have been attempted.
Maybe so.
But it never actually happened.
So, that July, Brigadier General William S. Harney toured the area and he noticed an American flag that Cutler and his friends had started flying for the 4th of July holiday. He asked them about it and they launched into this list of complaints about how vulnerable they were, both to attacks by Native Americans and to mistreatment by the British. And they cited the pig incident in this process.
Harney was staunchly anti-British. He had a little bit of a temper. He was very quick to anger, and he had a very foul mouth. By the end of his military career, he had been court-martialed four times. And even though he had just been to Vancouver to thank Governor Douglas for what a good job he'd been doing protecting the Americans from Native American attacks, he decided now would be a good time to show some force.
He characterized the Hudson's Bay Company's behavior as, quote, "oppressive interference." And without consulting his command or the War Department, he sent in Company D, 9th U.S. Infantry, under Captain George E. Pickett. The 66 men arrived on the USS Massachusetts, and they camped right by the Hudson's Bay Company's wharf and the sheep farm, which, you know, doesn't seem like they're provoking things at all. Harney did eventually tell the War Department what he was doing, but he didn't send this letter until July the 19th, and it didn't actually get there until September. So for a long time, he was just doing what he wanted with no one
kind of
being
posturing and taunting people. Although Pickett's orders were to protect against Native Americans and the British, he posted a notice claiming that the camp was American property and subject only to U.S. laws and courts, and that he, in fact, was in command of it.
Governor Douglas, having none of that and believing that Britain had lost Oregon by just being too welcoming, responded by sending in the 21-gun HMS Satellite, which was joined by the 31-gun frigate HMS Tribune under the command of Captain Jeffrey Phipps Hornby of the Royal Navy. And another warship also came to anchor, so there were three warships now off the coast of this island. He also appointed a justice of the peace to enforce British law, which he claimed was the only law in effect on the island.
So in spite of now facing down three warships, one of which carried 46 Royal Marines, Pickett refused to withdraw or stand down. He was publicly boastful, allegedly saying things like he would make a Bunker Hill of it if pressed, although at the time he sent worried-sounding dispatches asking for more reinforcements, and he appointed his own justice of the peace.
Harney kept funneling more troops into the area. Pickett was eventually reinforced by 171 men under Lieutenant Colonel Silas Casey, and together they all went to Victoria to try to negotiate with Rear Admiral R. Lambert Baines, who was commanding the British forces in the East Pacific.
Baines, on the other hand, was aboard the 84-gun HMS Ganges, which he refused to leave for negotiations, believing this entire thing to be ridiculous and beneath the involvement of, quote, two great nations.
Casey realized it was going to be pretty fruitless to go up against that kind of firepower, so he and everyone else went back to San Juan Island to ask for more reinforcements.
By the end of August, so keep in mind there's a letter out there somewhere floating around that hasn't reached the appropriate people yet. The American forces on San Juan Island had swelled to about 450 men who had armed themselves with 14 field cannons and an additional 8 32-pound guns collected from the USS Massachusetts. The U.S. troops reinforced their fortifications while the British Navy carried out drills along the coast with about 2,000 fighting men ready for action. And at this point, it was basically an arms race over a dead pig.
Yeah.
And from my own perspective, if you knew how tiny this piece of land was, it makes it extra hilarious. And slash, where did they put all those boats?
Well, and some of the boats, they would go out on maneuvers and they would just fire their cannons at the bluffs or at like big rocks that were on the land, which was vastly entertaining to some of the people who were around. It turned into this source of excitement of, okay, now we're going to do drills by firing our cannons at the bluffs here. Yeah.
Oh.
So in September, almost 3 months after Cutler shot the pig, word finally reached Washington, D.C., which was then approximately a six-week trip away, about what was going on. It was not through this letter sent to the War Department, though. It was when President James Buchanan read about it in the newspaper on September 3rd. Both the U.S. government and the British officials who were in Washington, D.C. were astonished that an international incident was brewing between Vancouver and Washington over a pig.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only imagine how startling that must be to be like, oh, did you know, by the way, there's about to be a war? Wait, what? We're involved in what?
Yeah. So you and I both did a lot of growing up during the 80s and a lot of like the nuclear war fear. Or is somebody going to push the red button?
Yeah, the constant Cold War discussion.
Yeah. And for a long time, I felt like a lot of this was just ridiculous paranoia and made up things. And then when I get to this part about how really there was almost a shooting war between the United States and Britain over a pig, I kind of go, oh, maybe that was not so completely far-fetched.
Right.
That somebody might just accidentally one day be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to push the button.
Yeah. Unfortunately, all of our civilization is still filled with humans who are fallible and will have lapses in judgment.
And fortunately, we now have video conferencing, which would have resolved a lot of the problems we're talking about in this episode.
President Buchanan, who had helped negotiate the Treaty of Oregon in the first place when he was Secretary of State, sent General Winfield Scott to try to restore calm. And General Scott was a battlefield general and a diplomat who had experience in border disputes, so he was really the perfect man for the job. And on top of this experience, General Scott also had firsthand knowledge of Harney's hotheadedness. He had been involved in half of Harney's courts-martial.
So Scott's trip out to this part of the world, which was a sea voyage through the Panama Canal, took another six additional weeks. But once he got there in October, he immediately set to work and stayed for about a month. Governor Douglas of Vancouver finally became an active participant in negotiations now that he had someone actually interested in negotiating to talk to.
During that time that he was set up, Scott ordered all but one company of U.S. soldiers off the island and convinced Governor Douglas to withdraw the British ships as well, leaving just one at anchor in Griffin Bay. All of these removals were to stay in place until a complete survey of the island was complete.
He also recommended that Harney be relieved of his command. Harney at this point was just being willfully insubordinate and had even tried to dismiss the troops that Scott had ordered to be left behind with troops of his own. And ultimately, he was indeed relieved of that command to the betterment of everyone.
Which seems like the wisest course of action.
Before we get into how this all resolved, let's take another moment.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, the United States and Britain finally negotiated a joint military occupation of the island, and that stayed in place for 12 years. Essentially, a few months after Scott's departure, Britain and the United States each sent about 100 troops to establish a presence on opposite ends of the island. So it was like, you can have the same amount of guys there.
It's like when parents of multiple children are trying to divide the exact right number
exactly
of French fries.
Like, or like
everybody
taping.
Everybody has equals.
Yeah, taping a line down the center of the bedroom. This is your side. This is your brother's side. Yeah.
The American effort was soon derailed by the impending Civil War, though. The soldiers were at that point all going without pay, and the camp was really falling into disrepair. When Virginia seceded on April 17th of 1861, Pickett gave up his command and he went home to join the Confederacy. He would later make a much bigger name for himself at the Battle of Gettysburg.
In 1871, Britain and the United States signed the Treaty of Washington, and the question of who San Juan Island belonged to was turned over to Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany, and he sent it on to a three-man arbitration panel. This arbitration commission went on in Geneva for almost a year before finally ruling that the island belonged to the United States, and this officially put the boundary between the United States and Canada through the Harrow Strait.
British troops withdrew from the island on November 25th of 1872, and the last of the U.S. troops had also left by July of 1874.
In 1966, the U.S. government created San Juan Island National Historical Park to commemorate the event and its nonviolent resolution. I have read several pieces that discuss this whole event as like a great example of how two nations can resolve something peacefully. Which, okay, that part happened.
Yes. But they should never have had to get to that point. It seems from the outside.
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of people, especially one particular person.
That Harney was a problem.
And I don't know why I had such trouble with his name. We've cut all this out, I think, but I managed to type his name three different ways in my notes for some reason. But yeah, he just kept wanting to take matters into his own hands and operate without going through the chain of command and basically be kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
And put more and more guys on this tiny island full of sheep.
And put more and more people at risk to kind of prove his point / support his ego.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was wrapping up the research on this podcast, I kind of did a second review to try to make sure that I had not just gotten the American point of view. Uh-huh. Because a lot of the major actors in this story, as we have told it, are the American people.
Right.
And so I went in and looked up some Canadian sources to just make sure. Because most of my original results happened to have been from American sources. And they were basically the same because it a lot of the instigation really was coming from the American side, which totally makes sense that then a lot of the resolution also needed to be started by the American side.
That's only fair. I'm sure that when General Scott went out, there was probably a certain degree of embarrassment about the whole thing having gotten to this point in the first place.
Yeah, he was not really happy about having to go all the way out there. He was not in great health and was all kind
of to go clean up a mess.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to travel for 6 weeks to go clean up this stupid mess. I would be quite put out.
I would too.
Thanks so much for joining us on this Saturday. Since this episode is out of the archive, if you heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of the show, that could be obsolete now. Our current email address is historypodcast@iheartradio.com. You can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May.
Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.